Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Pete Carroll reportedly has a meeting with Jody Allen this week. So if you're a fly on the wall in that meeting, what are you hoping to hear? That was my question for you guys, and it's my question for both you and I, Jake, before we jump into Hype Train. So let's get into it right now. Jake, you're a fly on the wall in that meeting. Buzz, buzz, buzz. That's you. What do you want to hear? What are you hoping that you hear Pete and Jody talking about?
Well, here's the deal. I don't know exactly where Jody Allen falls onto the spectrum of what exactly she wants to get down to the bottom of. And we don't really know much about Jody Allen,
like if she's
other
X's
than
X's and O's. Or...
Yeah, is she in X's and O's? Is she really into that side of it? Is she really into the numbers, the analytics side of it? And Pete Carroll mentioned that. But some of the things that I hope are being addressed as not just, hey, what do you think about these, but how are you going to fix them? How are you going to go and address them and fix them is number one. How are you going to fix the trenches? How are you going to fix your offensive line and not just address it, but fix it and make it a dominant unit to where if you love running the football and you want to see the best out of your quarterback, your offensive line needs to be stellar. How are you going to make that happen? Your pass rush. Pete Carroll, this is a staple of your 4-3 cover 3 scheme is having great pass rush. Well, this has been an area that we've struggled with for the last 4 years in coming together with a consistent answer. How are we going to make that better, and what are we going to do to fix that talent issue and production issue? Number two, for the last 4 years, as Ken Norton has been a defensive coordinator, we have seen a large enough sample size that there needs to be new eyes from a defensive coordinator standpoint, and that this group just hasn't developed an identity. I want to give credit to where credit's due for Ken Norton Jr., that when they've had issues at the beginning of the year, him and Pete Carroll have done a really good job in terms of addressing them, figuring them out, and making the defense better in the second half of the season. But you can't continue to run into the same problem over and over and over again and not have a clear identity as to who you are, what you're going to be, and how you're going to maximize your talent. So that, to me, is where there needs to be new eyes and new change at defensive coordinator. Number three, we got to get on board with Russell Wilson. How do we figure out how to make him feel good about the future here in Seattle and get you guys to be all on the same page? Pete Carroll, John Schneider, Russell Wilson. And as the owner, I'm tired of hearing the conversation about you guys not being on the same page. Let's figure it out. Let's figure this thing out and wrap up this, you know, controversy, and let's move forward together. How can we make that happen? How are you going to make that happen? Mm-hmm. Number four, possibly new structure in terms of involvement with front office for Pete Carroll. I mean, you know, it doesn't mean that he doesn't get a say at all, but what if there is a change in the dynamic between Pete Carroll and John Schneider? John Schneider maybe taking over as full responsibility in the front office in terms of roster decisions, and Pete Carroll becomes solely the head coach. We saw that happen with Mike Holmgren at one point in time in his career here in Seattle. Maybe that is the answer that needs to happen here if John Schneider, Pete Carroll see things differently and are not on the same page with how you improve this team and propel it moving forward. So that's another thing that needs to be addressed. And number five, the secondary has been a big issue, and there has been a revolving door when it comes to secondary play, particularly with the cornerback spot. How are we going to make sure that position is stable so that our defense can be better moving forward? So from an X's and O's standpoint, those are the types of conversations that I hope happen and I believe are very, very important, very impactful. And the answers to those questions are going to determine the future of this organization, Stacey, in my mind.
If you're just now joining us, we're talking about a meeting that Pete Carroll will reportedly have with Jody Allen. Now that the season is over, everyone does their exit interviews to say, how'd the season go? What are we going to do moving forward? The head coach is not exempt from that. That includes the head coach. So we have no idea when these two are going to meet or what they're going to talk about. But what we do know is what we think the Seahawks would want. So my question was, if you're a fly on the wall in that meeting, what are you hoping to hear? Jake's got a list of five five things he specifically wants to hear discuss. Things like adding insurance at quarterback, what you're going to do with defensive coordinator, getting Russell Wilson and Pete and John all on board in terms of the future here in Seattle for the three of them. Mine is a little more broad. Mine is a little more, it's not vague, it's just more general, because while I don't know who Jody Allen is as an owner, I don't know if she's a huge football fan, an X's and O's person, but I don't necessarily think that she needs to be. Maybe she is, but I don't think she needs to be. What I think you need to be a great owner is two things. Now, here's me just kind of spitballing here, because who knows, I'm not an NFL owner, but I'm looking at what doesn't work, and I need the opposite of those two things. What doesn't work? I think what's happening in Chicago is a perfect example of that right now. Chicago is one of the league's most storied franchises, most celebrated franchises, oldest franchises, and yet they are a hot mess. I know that all eyes are on Brian Flores' surprise firing in Miami, or Urban Meyer being out in Jacksonville and what's going to happen there, but I am telling you, what's happening in Chicago is so weird and has so many former Chicago Bears players and reporters and everyone so fired up, and that's in part been spurred by a very weird, awkward, cringeworthy press conference by George McCaskey, who's the chairman of the Bears. And here's what I want. The opposite of that. Number one, I think that some people, some owners, are in the business of football or the business of baseball and not necessarily in the business of winning. I think the best owners can be in the business of making money. That's why you're an owner. You're shrewd. You're a business person. That's how you got there. But I also would love it if you were in the business of winning. That's also what makes for great owners. Like, Robert Kraft is in the business of winning. Say what you will about him, right? He's trying to make money. He's a billionaire, just like every other billionaire out there. But, like, there's a difference between, hey, we're just going to skate by, and we know that people are going to buy tickets and go to games, and we don't really care if they get to a Super Bowl. If they do, great, but we're focused on the bottom line and making money, and I'm not going to really put any pressure on anyone. I want to know that you're in the business of winning, because I think that's one thing. If you know nothing else about football, you know that winning is important to any sport. And if you care about it, then that's one of the biggest things you could ask for from any owner. The second is a sense of direction. So George McCaskey was asked, hey, how are you going to feel? This is, in a press conference with Chicago reporters. Hey, you're looking for a new head coach. How are you going to feel if you get a head coach that maybe isn't on board with Justin Fields and doesn't think Justin Fields is the answer? Is that like a disqualifier for you? It was not, which is bonkers. It blows my mind. Whether or not you, a listener, think that Justin Fields is the answer, the Chicago Bears better think he's the answer, because you traded up to get him. You gave up a future first-round pick and more, something like a fourth or a fifth, plus your first-round pick for this year, and then like a fifth or fourth rounder this year. You gave up a first-round pick and more to be able to move up and select him. He better be your guy. And if I'm bringing in a head coach, he better be his guy too. So a sense of direction. What's the plan? What's your plan for my biggest investments? If I'm an owner, I've made an investment. I'm paying the coach a ton of money. I'm paying the GM a ton of money. As a team, we've invested a lot into the quarterback, into, you might pay DK Metcalf. There's Tyler Lockett. You know what I mean? Like, there's
Jamal Adams, Bobby Wagner.
Jamal Adams, you gave up two first rounders. What's the plan for my biggest investments? Because I don't want to hear that you don't have one. So I think that that's ultimately, I think, the two things that it's almost like the most, but also two most important things you could ask for an owner.
Well, and that's a great point. I mean, when you talk about your investments, you want to see your investments pay off, right? You want to see them perform at their best. And when they're not, why is that the case? Is there a problem in the way that the player is performing? Is my investment a bad investment and therefore I need to move on from that investment? Or are there issues in terms of what's going on internally that is preventing my investment from becoming what it should be? Mm-hmm. And that is a determination that Jody Allen has to make with Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and the rest of the crew to figure out what is the best solution moving forward to get the most out of their star talent. And that is another huge aspect of it. You're 100% right, Stacey. I mean, you could add that. I would probably put that in my top five and take out the insurance at cornerback. That, to me, is so important for this organization moving forward, and it's part of, the ongoing problem. So I believe that when you're looking at this team, there are a lot of things that you need to address, you need to fix. There's a lot of positives in terms of the you know, the snapshot of what this team could be in the final month of the season, the final two games of the season. But there still is a lot to address. There's a lot to be fixed. And to live in the reality of that this team is just simply not good enough, their roster is not good enough in terms of a depth perspective, this is a team as of right now. If you keep it all together and you run this thing back next year, this is a playoff team if your stars perform up to the standard. The difference is you need to make your roster a playoff caliber roster that when your stars play great, they become a Super Bowl caliber team. And that's where I think that this conversation needs to be flipped on its head. And that is the things that they have to determine. And hopefully it will be addressed as they get into this ownership meeting with Jody Allen. Because I firmly believe that she is invested, she is involved, that she's not just some, you know, owner off into the distance that doesn't know what's going on. I don't believe that for a second. We don't know definitively the style in which she brings to this organization, but I seriously doubt that she is not heavily evaluating this team and where she believes it needs to go moving forward, and having some of those hard conversations with both Pete Carroll and John Schneider in order to find the best solution. And that is what I'm hoping, is that there's more of how are you going to solve these rather than tell me what you're going to do. Tell me what your plan is.
Speaking of Pete and John, a report from Michael Silver at about 10:30 this morning said we should have some clarity on the Seahawks, Pete Carroll, and John Schneider soon, hopefully today. Unless there's any breaking news about that, I'm not going to get back to it, but I do want to touch on it to just wrap it up one last time and say, I don't know what that report means. I don't know what information Michael Silver has. I think, Jake, that any of us would be shocked to see Pete Carroll and John Schneider move on. So I know that you guys are seeing that report, and maybe I'll be wrong and eating crow or whatever, but like, I would be floored if those two moved on.
Me too. I would be floored as well. I do not anticipate that being the case. I mean, really, I view this as the most likely outcome is that things stay status quo, and there's a very high percentage that that is the case. The only thing that I am curious to find out with this meeting and with Michael Silver kind of alluding to maybe there's still some potential gray area, is maybe there's a change in terms of, you know, the structure of the leadership. Is there change of, you know, the responsibilities that Pete Carroll and John Schneider have? Does John Schneider take more control over the roster construction? And does Pete Carroll get moved to more of a head coach, you know, solely head coaching role? That happened with Mike Holmgren at one point in time in his tenure. It happened with Belichick. Yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon to see that that change end up happening. But that would be the only thing that I could see happen. Like you said, I would be floored if it was anything other than John Schneider, Pete Carroll are here. These are your leaders. These are the guys at the top of this organization. But maybe the roles are shifted a little bit. That would be the only thing that could potentially come out of this. Even then, I'm a little bit skeptical that that would actually end up happening.
I know, because it's like, I don't know why you would do either or move on. At this point, you know, like, maybe you are someone who feels they should move on from Carroll. I think that the feeling they have heading out of the last game is that maybe your quickest way to a Super Bowl is to keep everything intact and just find a way to improve. And so it would seem weird to kind of, you know, turn on that idea. And I don't know. That last time I'll talk about it, and we'll let you know if there's any more updates.
Yeah, I mean,
that's how we feel about it.
For all we know, Michael Silver just might have gotten information that the meeting's happening today.
He's like, the meeting's happening, you guys. So I just want to let you know that that's happening today. All right, let's head down to the station for Hype Train. All right, here's how this works. It's Hype Train. We do this every single Wednesday. I tell you guys a big trend, a big idea that's happening in the world of sports this week. You, Jake, you, Curtis, and I'll chime in as well, will decide whether or not we're buying in. We're buying our ticket. We're boarding the train. We believe it. We'll have to explain why. Or whether this is all hype. I'm not buying it. I don't believe it. It is nothing but a hype train. I am letting it move on by. So let's get to the first one here. Brian Flores, a surprise firing out of Miami, considering that he won 8 of his last 9 contests and took a not-so-great Dolphins roster into a pretty decent team by the end of the year, but yet he is fired. The Dolphins going to move on with another head coaching hire. But here's the hype train. Nothing to do with the Dolphins. Brian Flores is the next head coach to be hired in the NFL.
Now, you're saying like the very first head coach to be hired in this process?
The next head coaching hire will be Brian Flores.
Man, that's a hard one to predict. I am not going to get on this train. I do believe Brian Flores will be a head coach that will be hired in this cycle. Around the league, he is very respected, and people respect the job that he has done in Miami. This was a very surprising firing. It sounded like there was a power struggle between head coach and GM, and the GM won out, which it just blows my mind in this circumstance. And so, therefore, I think Brian Flores does get a job, but this is way too unpredictable to definitively say. And, man, I don't know. Dan Quinn is a very popular name right now in the head coaching world, head coaching search. And I'm going to put my money on Dan Quinn being the first hire that happens in the NFL.
Oh, Dan Quinn as a head coach? Dan Quinn hired as head coach? Okay. Yep. Curtis, the hype train is that Brian Flores will be the next head coach hired in the NFL. Who knows where, but he's the next big name to land a spot. Jake isn't boarding. He thinks it could be Dan Quinn. How about you?
Boy, I mean, look at Brian Flores, what he was able to do. He was the first Dolphins head coach to have back-to-back winning seasons since Dave Wanstead did it from 2000 to 2003. Miami, not an easy place to win, and this year they didn't have a very easy road to get to a winning record and still were able to finish, what, with 8 wins in their last 9 games? Mm-hmm. Brian Flores is a really good coach. But will he be the first head coach hired in this coaching cycle? It's really hard to say because there's going to be a team out there that just wants to get this done quickly. I don't think he'll be the first one, but I think he will get hired in this cycle. I think he's going to be very meticulous about his next spot in hopes that there isn't a repeat of what we saw in Miami. But, I mean, the job that he did this year, even after the terrible start that they got off to, really good job by him. He is very much deserving of another shot as a head coach in the NFL.
I'm also not boarding. I want to say that he'll be the first hire, but Curtis, I'm going to your last point there. I think the fact that he is such a good head coach, had such a good track record with Miami, is such a surprising hiring and was defended by so many players, by the way. Not the firing, that is. I mean, Brian Flores as a coach. I think he's just got more offers to entertain. Like, I think he'll be doing more interviews, talking to more people, and it might take a little bit longer to make that decision, whereas maybe an offensive coordinator that is jumping on opportunity to be a head coach sees one that he just can't pass up and takes that one. So my gut is telling me, my head is telling me to say, you know, yes, it'll be him. Of course, it'll be him. But my gut's just keeping me from doing it. So no one boarding this hype train. Although congratulations to Brian Flores on, I'm assuming has to be a soon to be head coaching job. Next hype train. All right. Well, after the Seahawks season finale against the Arizona Cardinals, it's all you were seeing on Twitter. Team bring it back, run it back, or team tear it down. So why not just pick one of them? It's going to be a tear down off season for the Seahawks. That's the hype train.
This is going to be determined on Russell Wilson, in my opinion, whether Russell Wilson fully is, you know, bought in to the plan and fully, you know, engaged and wants to move forward and you know, sees what Jody Allen decides to do. And obviously what we know that probably is going to be that Pete Carroll and John Schneider are here in Seattle. So does Russell Wilson trust that vision and ultimately believe in what they are doing and what their plan is to, you know, progress this team moving forward? Now, if you're asking me that question right now, I'm going to say, no, I'm not getting on that hype train. It is not tear it down offseason for the Seahawks. I believe that they are moving forward as if they are going to really compete within this division and really truly try to take the same mantra that they always have, which is, you know, going and competing for Super Bowls and championships every single year.
All right, Curtis, it's a tear down offseason for the Seahawks. That's the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. Jake is not.
Trying to decide between what I want to see happen, what I think will happen, and just reading the tea leaves of today and the days since the end of the season, it doesn't sound like Pete and John are going anywhere. Maybe they reshuffle the deck a little bit. We see a little added responsibility given to John Schneider. Who knows if that could happen? But man, oh man, do I think that there are some much-needed changes that have to happen for the Seahawks if they want to get back to the Super Bowl.
Are you boarding?
Is it a teardown offseason for the Seahawks? No, I don't think it is. I think they are a team right now that thinks that they have the pieces in place. Whether they do or not is an entirely different question, and I don't think they do. But I think they need to make some drastic changes. I don't think it's going to happen. So that is why I'm not getting on this train.
Squeezing in a hot take there at the end, though. I like it. All right. I'm also not boarding this one. I don't think that it's a teardown offseason. I think that the only way that happens, like Jake said, is if they move on from Russell Wilson. I don't see that happening unless Russell Wilson demands a trade, which I also don't know that I see that happening. So no, I think that they're going to have to approach the offseason the same way they always which is trying to find a way to get the most talent with like some mid-level draft picks. We'll see if they can make it work. Next hype train. All right, I got back-to-back hype trains here about wild card weekend. Starts Saturday, by the way. We have so many games to fit in here with that extra spot. So here's the first hype train, the first upset of wild card weekend. It happens on Saturday. New England over number 3 Buffalo Bills. That is the Saturday evening game, by the way. 5:15 kickoff between number 6 New England at Buffalo.
Ooh, man, New England's been kind of sliding in into the playoffs here. They are not building on positive momentum, and you know that I've been very high on the New England Patriots, and I do not like the way that they have finished the season here, guys. I'm going to go with Buffalo in this one. I think Buffalo is going to win this game. I do not see the upset happening here with New England.
All right, the hype train is that the New England Patriots, number 6 seed in the AFC, who are being hosted by the Buffalo Bills for the Saturday evening game, are the first upset of wild card weekend. That would also mean the Bengals beat the Raiders. They're the game directly preceding that. Curtis, Jake is not boarding this hype train. He thinks the Bills win. Do you?
I defy anyone to pick against Bill Belichick in January. I defy anybody to do it.
First person to board a hype train today.
I'm getting on this train. I think the Patriots ground and pound their way to a victory like they did on Monday Night Football earlier this year. Mac Jones I wouldn't say he's regressed, but he definitely has not built off of the middle part of the season that he had this year. But in the playoffs, as we know, you got to run the football to win, and the Patriots can absolutely do that with the best of them. And
come on, Curtis, the weather, he's got a rag on.
The quarterback,
Josh Allen over in Buffalo.
He didn't even know his name. That guy over in Buffalo.
That guy over in Buffalo.
He's got a heck of an ab, throwing it all over the yard. Let me get to the last hype train here. Curtis is boarding very, very quick. We'll wrap it up here in the final minute. I need you both to listen very carefully to the teams that I'm about to list. You've got the number 5 Las Vegas Raiders, number 6 New England Patriots, the Philadelphia Eagles, the San Francisco 49ers, Pittsburgh Steelers, and Arizona Cardinals. Here is the hype train. 3 of those teams will win. That's right. You're going to have 3 upsets. 3 upsets at wild card weekend.
Boy.
Raiders, Pats, Eagles, 49ers, Steelers, Cardinals. 3 of those will win in advance. Jake, are you boarding that hype train?
Oh, man. Okay, so I'm looking at them right now, and, oh, man, this would be hard. I want to board it so bad. You know what? Heck with it. I'm going to board it. I'm going to contradict myself here. I'm boarding this hype train. Bold. Here's the 3 that I'm going to tell you that are going to win, okay? It is going to be the San Francisco 49ers over the Dallas Cowboys. It's going to be the Philadelphia Eagles over Tampa Bay because Tampa Bay is so injured right now, and Philly has a really good running game. They are dangerous, and they are unpredictable. So, and then, finally, I know I just said that I'm predicting Buffalo to, you know what, no, I'm picking the Raiders over Cincinnati, a team that I love, but they're young, they're inexperienced in the playoffs, and who knows what Derek Carr and that Raiders offense can do. Those are my 3 picks in terms of lower seeds beating upper seeds. How about that?
Like it. Curtis, any of those lower
I don't feel
seeds?
Good about this at
the
all.
The hype train is that there are going to be 3 upsets in wild card weekend, which means the Raiders, Patriots, Eagles, 49ers, Steelers, and Cardinals, of all of those teams, 3 of them win in advance.
Now, I already said the Patriots would win.
Yeah, so that means you're picking one. Can you buy 2 more teams?
I for sure will buy another team, and it's a team that has limped their way to the end of the season, the Arizona Cardinals. I think they could very easily beat the Rams on Monday.
I forgot about that game.
Because Matthew Stafford is not someone I want to hitch my wagon to in the playoffs at all. I am all the way out on a Rams title run simply because of Matthew Stafford being their quarterback. But I do not see another upset. I think there's 2 upsets. New England over Buffalo, Arizona over L.A. but no other upset on the board.
Yeah. I'm telling myself not to board this hype train, and I won't. But let me say one upset that you guys are going to be surprised by, and I don't even know if I believe it or just want to be controversial. I think the first upset, the first upset of Wild Card Weekend is going to be the first game of Wild Card Weekend, despite being a trash team half the time. I think the number 5 Raiders beat the number 4 Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, man.
And
I would be
find
so
this
sad.
Audio and
I'd
delete
be
it
so
if
sad
that
to see
happen.
That.
Oh. I think that might happen. I worry that might happen. All right. Matt Hasselbeck said something really fascinating with Mike Salk this morning. I'll tell you what it is next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Matt Hasselbeck was on for the Matt Hasselbeck Show today. It's every Wednesday on the Mike Salk Show, and Matt had some interesting things to say about the end of the season. Now, everyone should have lots of positive feelings heading out of the Seahawks season finale against Arizona. It was a really fun game to watch. Rashad Penny rushed for 190 yards. Could have had 200, but maybe they decided to rest him. I don't know. Take a little easy at the end there. Either way, it was a fantastic performance for Penny, who had 130 rushing yards in 4 out of the final 5 games. The offensive line stepped up. They met the challenge. Everyone played really well to end the year, minus a handful of mistakes. But ultimately, Matt Hasselbeck says, look, you have to live in reality. Here's what he means.
You got
to
have that day or that time where you live in reality, and you also, you know, the facts are the facts. I mean, you could say the exact same thing as you could say, you know, we scored 10 points against the Rams. We lost to the third string quarterback in Chicago and a team that fired their coach. And then we beat Detroit with a backup quarterback. And then we beat Arizona. We look great, but this is also a team that lost 4 of their last 5.
Well,
like, they're in a downward spiral. So it's like, it's both.
Yeah.
Like, yes, the positivity, I'm all for it. It's a great way to finish strong. At the same time, like, this is the Seattle Seahawks. There's a championship sort of standard there.
There's two ways I look at this, Jake. One, there absolutely is a championship standard, and this team cannot have a third season where it struggles on third down and allows a ton of yards on defense. And I know that those things are often related and sometimes not, and there are lots, there are myriad issues to go in there. I mean, one of them, for instance, is like Russell Wilson, who on third and between 4 and 7 this year completed something like 42% of his passes. That's not good enough. It's also down from 2020. It was weird.
Yeah.
But he needs to be better on third down. The team needs to be better on third down. They defensively can't give up so many yards to start the season and put themselves behind the eight ball and then try to fix things midway through. And it's just, there's just things that they can't do for a third consecutive year. How do you mix? Like, how do I, as if I'm a fan and I hear that cut and I watch the end of the season and I'm excited about what I saw, but mad that they're not in the playoffs, how do you make it make sense between what am I excited about and what needs to change?
Well, all right, Stacey, I'm going to give it to you. That's a great question, okay?
Thank you, Curtis.
That's a great,
wow.
That's a
point.
Great question. Now,
great question.
The reason
Remember
why
that.
That's a great question is because there's room for both. You don't need to be blindly positive and say, hey, there's no changes that need to be made. Look, see, we figured it out, and we need to stick with this group and run it back, and here we go, and we're going to keep the same personnel, same everything, because that's what was positive to finish the year, okay? You should not be that way. But you should be positive about the way that the offense was playing. Some of the growth that you saw with your defense and the way that it finished the year. And ultimately, I think the most obvious thing is the offense was a real reason why. Rashad Penny, the way that he was running the football, the way the offensive line was playing, Russell Wilson looking, you know, significantly more like himself. The conversion rate on third down was just phenomenal. That part of it, you want to see go into year 2, and you want to see them be able to make that happen and build towards something positive in that way. But at the same time, what Matt Hasselbeck, Stacey, what you and I have been talking about every single day here for the last couple weeks, for the last month, really since the Saints game and even after, you know, this Cardinals game, is that you have to be very critical in the way that you are looking at this roster, because you are not good enough. You're not close to winning a championship. You have pieces and you have moves that you can make to get yourself back into that conversation, but you have to look at this with a critical eye and know that just because you finished really, really well the last 2 games of the season, it doesn't excuse all the bad things that happened through the majority of the year and the stark reality that this roster just wasn't good enough. And yes, Russell Wilson didn't perform well through the season. You need him to play better. You didn't get the most out of your stars this year, and that would have helped you win, you know, more games. Jason Myers making field goals would have helped you win more games. But you would not have been a legit contender going into the Super Bowl this season. So I believe that you have to be critical from that point of view and know that there are some clear decisions that you have to make from a roster construction standpoint in order to make your team better.
I also think that there's like a specific mindset that I have with it that I'm not gonna tell anyone how to be a fan, but I do think that what can sometimes happen is that you adjust your expectations in the wrong direction. So for instance, you know, hey, this team was 12-4 last year and awful on third down. And this year they were still bad on third down, but we know that they can win 12 games being bad on third down. The reality is that being horrible on third down strongly correlates with losing football. Allowing a ton of yards defensively strongly correlates with like giving up points defensively. Sometimes it doesn't. It didn't for the Seahawks on third down last year, and it didn't for the Seahawks defensively this year. They held teams to 21.5 points this year, and they got 12 wins last year. Those are two great things. They're also not altogether common. Like, you shouldn't be lowering the bar. The bar should still be, you know, yeah, like Graz always said, don't get tired of winning. But also, like, don't lose track of what makes a winning football team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't necessarily change the definition of what winning is or how you win.
And the thing is the areas that you want to see improved and the areas that you really like to see in the end of the year, third down, okay, third down, run offense, and ultimately your quarterback playing better, all to me have one common denominator, and that is offensive line play. Your offensive line played significantly better in that phase of the game, and you saw Rashad Penny take off. You saw your third down numbers increase. You saw your quarterback and Russell Wilson play to the standard that he is capable of, right? It wasn't perfect, but played significantly better and more to the standard of what we know Russell Wilson can be. And that, to me, shouldn't be controversial. Yet it has been a sticking point and a consistent topic of conversation for a long time now. That has to change. And this should be a motivating factor and say, see, look what happens when our offensive line can play a physical brand of football, can control the line of scrimmage, can protect the quarterback. You have the talent to be able to make all of that come together and be a dominant, you know, tremendous unit. And what are you going to do to critically make that group better and get impact on the at the line of scrimmage? Also, it changes the way that you look at your time of possession and all those different things. Looking at the defense and saying, yeah, they didn't give up a bunch of points, but they're still giving up a ton of yards. Stacey, that impacts your offense. It impacts the time of possession. It impacts, you know, the way that the game is being played, and it forces you to have to be perfect in every aspect in order to get wins. It makes it so much harder on you as a team, and that has to be changed. And what's one way that you can do that is by getting a better pass rush, solidifying your defensive line. And so these are areas that you look at critically and say, you can't just turn a blind eye just because the results were better. You need to be able to still have a critical eye and look at this team and how they can improve moving forward, knowing that there was some things positively that you can build off of.
All right, what I need to know, that's how we wrap up the show every single day, and we need your questions for it. So send your questions in right now. Any question you have, now that we've wrapped up 4 hours of this show, well, 3¾ hours of this show, we've talked about the defense, we've talked about this weird report from Michael Silver, we've talked to Bob Condotta about how none of us really think much is going to change anyway, and we've talked about whether or not that can be a good thing and how they can move forward, what they need to change, all kinds of stuff about this team. So when you have any questions left over, like we all do, send them in right now. Send your questions in, any question you want, 206-421-3776. Your questions are next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get your questions in right now. We'll start with this one. What I need to know, why does not having preseason games matter late in the season? Shouldn't a team have their act together late in the season, especially from about week 7 or 8 on? It's a really good question. I do think that it was interesting to hear a couple players, whether it be former players. I know that Wyman's talked about this. Ray Roberts has talked about this. Or even Ethan Posick, who said it might have been great to have OTAs. I think that I don't know about affecting late in the season. I think what it is when it slows the entire process of getting up to speed, then you're going to run into trouble. Another thing I would say is, there might, and Jake, I'm curious to hear your opinion, there might be some units that just need it more than others. Like an offensive line that struggled might need it more than, you know, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill need the preseason to build chemistry.
Right. It's all in context, right? Absolutely. And look, your pass defense as well. That's a unit that needs to be on the same page and in communication. Pass rush, you hear pass rushers talk about how important it is to work together to understand how to play off of each other. That is very, very valuable. And obviously, when you have a new offense, a new offensive scheme, you want to be able to put that into work, into action in live situations, so you can learn from those mistakes. You can, you know, feel the rhythm and the flow of the game. And obviously, I believe that it doesn't affect you later on, but I 100% agree with the way that you stated that is it definitely slows the process down as to when you start to hit your stride. And that is one area that I know that the Seahawks are going to approach differently going into this next offseason. I do believe you'll see everybody involved in OTAs. I do believe that Pete Carroll will treat preseason games like he traditionally always has, and that is to take them seriously, and that is to, you know, put more of their guys into action than to, you know, go the other way this year and sit everybody out.
What I need to know, if Kelnick's soundbite is smell you later, what's your soundbite? Curtis's is when he freaked out about Greg Olsen. And you yelled, not like some decrepit 35-year-old. Yeah,
that's
so
it.
That's your soundbite.
Yeah.
And you did it when you were 29, so it hurt even more because you were still in your 20s.
It was,
when you were screaming from the top of the rooftops that a 35-year-old was decrepit.
They still are decrepit.
Okay.
And when I get to that age,
enough,
I'll be decrepit,
enough.
Too.
Now, Jake's would be really something. No, Jake's would be Jake-ism. Jack of all...
Yeah.
Any Jake isn't, but Jack of all aces. He's really a Jack of all aces. Is the most, I think, well-known Jake ism. Like that's the one I see the most.
I threw out a known Jake ism, which is lean your hat on, and
someone was like, "Jake, it's hang your hat."
Yeah, they're like, "Jake, yeah. Don't you know anything?"
Yeah, you gotta stay tuned to the show. You gotta stay in tune for the inside jokes that consistently happen here.
Connor Whittington
until you get the next Jake.
You know, he got like a $20,000 signing bonus. Where is his fit? Is he a jack of all aces in terms of offensively, running back, slot receiver? Do you see him more of a slot guy? Look, it's the greatest compliment. It's the greatest compliment I could give. Jack of all aces is significantly better. I just gotta say that.
Mine would probably be. Complaining. Whenever I've complained about, that's something that checks out for me. I am cool. That's very on brand. That is unfortunately
Crybaby Stacy.
No,
nope.
Jake, you're not part of this conversation. I'm not Crybaby Stacy anymore. I've grown up since then. Why are all of mine bad?
Holy smokes. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Oh,
that checks
God.
Out.
What I need to know, I don't think they'll get rid of the big three, John, Pete, and Russ, but would you trade DK for picks?
No, I wouldn't. I understand the question. I understand why you would think that. I mean, look, adding a $20 million receiver to your payroll right now is not something that I'm definitely, you know, it's not something that I'm fond of from a cap perspective. But at the same time, I believe DK Metcalf is a star. I believe he is an integral part of what they're doing right now. And it would be crazy to move on from DK Metcalf at this point in time. So unless Russell Wilson's not a part of the equation here in Seattle, I don't think you could even consider moving on from DK Metcalf and start thinking about trade capital. You need DK here. The combination of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett is one of the best in the NFL. And I would ride with DK Metcalf. Absolutely, and have zero questions about it. So I understand where you're coming from, and I don't think it's a silly question at all. But right now, given the current state of things, you have a superstar player in DK Metcalf. I don't think you can move on from
Curtis. How could I possibly forget this? The Mac and Jack text line says, "Where's the fresh water?"
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that, no, Curtis doesn't want to admit it.
I don't know what you're, well.
Curtis, that is absolutely
That was a debate, though, with the old Bob Ross and Tom show.
Curtis, you so confidently said that.
Well, because it is.
Puget Sound, that's freshwater.
Well, yeah, it is. Me and my truthers, we meet every Thursday. We're like flat earthers, but we're freshwaterers. And
I see.
Look, you all are sheep for thinking that it's salt water.
Okay.
I'm going to go out and drink a bunch of it when we're done here. Okay?
What I need to know.
And we'll never
I've done my own research, okay?
What I need to know, if you could be on fly on the wall for any NFL position meeting, where would you go? Jake, you cannot say the Seahawks quarterback room. A fly on the wall of any NFL position meeting anywhere, I would want to be a fly on the wall for head coaching hires. That's what I would.
If you want like the inside scoop and
want to
know like what's really going on, be in the QB room. But if you want like entertaining and fun,
absolutely.
Oh man, the Seahawks tight end room would have been legendary for a long time while Luke Wilson was in there. That's a great room that I would have wanted to be a fly on the wall to hear those conversations. Let's see. Right now, I would probably say the DB room because I would love to hear what Quandre Diggs is saying half the time.
What I need to know, how's that 1984 sheepdog looking after a couple weeks of use?
Stacey hasn't brought it back since we roasted her for first.
Since we talked about it, she refuses to bring the bag in. Stacey, we are so sorry. We didn't mean for you to walk in with
this
bag, feel good about it. And, you know, knock the bag. We weren't knocking it. We were just saying it looks significantly like Dumb and Dumber's 1984 sheepdog van that was out there. So
right.
I don't know if that was the look.
Today.
That's the new fashion and style and
you
way.
Are so van fashion. That'll do it for us today. We have to go. Unfortunately.
What's in fashion?
It's been
sheepdog.
We have to go. For Curtis Rogers, for Jake Heaps, I'm Stacey Ross. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bub are coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle. I am cool.